Thank you for the introduction and for the invitation. What I will tell you about in the next hour is some work very much in progress with my collaborators in Berkeley, Raymond Ko, who is a student, Lawrence Hall, and another postdoc, Duccio Papadopoulo. And what we are trying to suggest is that by performing a very minor modification to the standard cosmology, you can have displaced vertices from dark matter Friesian. And I will review what Friesian is, and I will review how this may sound surprising or even wrong, because if you are familiar with Friesian, you know that in order to reproduce the observed dark matter abundance, you expect decay length way above the collider size. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to address. So before I start with the Friesian, I would like to just review very quickly something I'm sure you're all very familiar with, but just to set the scale and set the notation. So I will review the WIMP case very quickly. So to get the WIMP abundance, you have to solve a Boltzmann equation. On the left-hand side, you have the number density as it changes with time. And on the right, you have the reasons why it changes with time. One is, of course, the Hubble expansion. The other one is the annihilation reactions. And you can solve this equation, but the physics is very simple. So at very early times, the chi, the WIMP chi, is in thermal equilibrium with the standard model plasma through annihilations. And he has a full T cube thermal abundance. And at some point, the expansions take over, and the Hubble rate is as big as the reaction rate. And then the annihilation reactions are not able anymore to keep the particle in thermal equilibrium. And this is very important for what follows. This freeze out happens around temperature of the value, the mass over 20. So that's the typical scale where decoupling, chemical decoupling happens. And then after the freeze out, the number density only redshifts with the expansion. So it just changes because the universe is expanding. And the final important result is that if the cross section is bigger, you have less dark matter. And you see this from this plot, because if the dark matter annihilation cross section is larger, then the particle will stay in thermal equilibrium longer. And this departure happens along the Maxwell-Boltzmann tail of the distribution. And so if it stays in equilibrium longer, you will have less around. So the final abundance is inverse. It goes like the inverse cross-section. And there is a typo here. It should not be a square. OK, so now let's go to the Friesian. So Friesian can be broadly defined as is in this slide. So you have the standard model. You have a visible sector, which is made of standard model particles, ASM. And then you have a bunch of BI particles, which I call B because they are BAT particles. So they are additional particles, additional with respect to the standard model. And they are in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. So for example, they could be quarks, neutralinos, fermions, leptons, or other particles. So the only assumption here is that they are in thermal equilibrium with the standard model. And then you have the FIMP, where FIMP stands for feebly interacting massive particle, which is a particle X, and I will call in the following X, which has a very weak renormalizable coupling with the standard model. So it's very, very weakly coupled to the standard model, so weakly coupled that it never gets to thermal equilibrium. So you assume that you start with zero density of this FIMP, maybe as a consequence of inflation that depletes any initial abundance you can have. And then interactions are so weak that this guy never thermalizes. But still, he has some weak interactions. So this very weak interaction can serve as a production source for this FIMP. And then you can produce FIMP particles without ever achieving thermal equilibrium, but maybe getting an interesting abundance. Okay. So here I have an example where the production is through decays. So you have a BAT particle which decays to standard model, anything of the standard model, plus X. And again, the Boltzmann equation you have to solve is analogous to the case of the WIMP. The only difference here is the reason why the number density is changing is, of course, proportional to the decay width of this particle here, which is the rate at which it decays. It's proportional to the number density of B, because the more B you have, the more decays you will have. And then there is some Bessel function, which just, yes?
That the chi is in a thermal distribution?
So the X, you mean? No, the X is not in a thermal distribution function. So what I do to get this Boltzmann equation is to assume that there is only this reaction going one direction. So there is no inverse reaction. And you have a number of x which is much, much less than a number of b. And, but you still change the number of x because these b are in thermal equilibrium, and then you can produce them through decays. So you produce them, but never so much that they get to thermal equilibrium.
But what I'm wondering is why you use the integrated version of the Boltzmann equation instead of tracking the evolution of the distribution.
Oh, you want the, like the f in the phase space? Yeah, so all I'm assuming is that the f, the phase space distribution of x, is much smaller than the one of b. And then you start from the Boltzmann equation for the f. And then you do the usual integral, and you get this one. So this nx is just the integral over the d3p of f. So it's a number density in the phase space. So I'm not assuming any equilibrium here. This n is generic. Is I can skip.
I mean, if x is non-relativistic enough, then you don't really care what it's like.
Yeah, but all you are doing here is. So I start from the Boltzmann equation for f, which is, of course, the right thing to do. Then I take this integral, and under the very crucial assumption that fx is much smaller than fb equilibrium, which is because this particle is very weakly interacting, then this is the equation you get from the just deriving. And this Bessel function arises exactly because you are doing integral of this type. So I'm starting from the f, but then this is what you see. Yes, I'm always assuming that b and for example, think about the xeno. B could be an xeno, right? So you have gauge interactions. These are always good to keep the B in thermal equilibrium. Other questions about Friesen? OK, so once we have the Boltzmann equation, we can solve the Boltzmann equation. And here I have some solutions. So let me explain the solutions here. On the horizontal axis, I have x, mb over t. It's the usual variable you have for the Friesen. And on the vertical axis, I have y, the number of x over the entropy density. So this is the same plot as for the freeze-out. But here you see that there is an asymptotic y at large times. But you also see that it's very different. So you don't start from a Maxwell-Boltzmann equilibrium, and then you decouple. But here you are trying to reach thermal equilibrium. So you increase the number of x, but you never get there. Yeah, because y equilibrium is somewhere up here. And the crucial point I want to make in these two plots is that well, let me tell you that these plots are for fixed values of mb and mx. And I will use, in all the following example, the same numbers. So mb is 300 JeV, mx is 100 JeV. And then gamma, the decay width of b, is just parameterized in terms of a dimensionless coupling times the mass. And here I have three different solutions for three different decay width of the b. Okay? And the blue line reproduces the abundance. So for the blue line, you get that rho dark matter is the observed one. The other two values are larger values of the decay width, so you end up overproducing. And the asymptotic moving density this time is proportional to the interaction rate. Because this is the opposite of freeze-out, right? Freeze-out, if you interact strongly, you stay in equilibrium longer and you have less in the end. Freeze-in, if you interact strongly, you make them more. So these different dependence will be important for my next point. And the nice thing about freeze-in is that as the freeze-out is the freeze-out density is fixed at mass over 20 at this temperature. Here, the abundance is produced at temperature of the order of the mass of the B. So it's an infrared-dominated process. So it doesn't care about initial conditions or the value of the Rydberg temperature, like, for example, you may have for gravitino productions. This is only a property. The final abundance is just a property of the plasma, so the temperature and what particles you have around, and just properties of couplings you can, in principle, measure in a lab. Okay, so it's totally IR dominated, IR sensitive. There is no UV sensitivity on this final abundance. OK, so of course, there are four main cases for the freeze-in. So I was here, I just catch one. But of course, there are four cases. And the four cases are defined as following. So X is the FIMP, but you always have a LOSP, which is, in the case of SUSY, you may think as the FIMP as the gravitino, and the LOSP as the neutralino, whatever is the lightest observable particle of the observable sector. And of course, the dark matter will be the lightest among the two. Okay, so the first distinction is to make, what is the lightest one? Is the FIMP or the LOSP? And which is the dark matter? And the other distinction to make is if the production is mostly through freeze out or freeze in. So let's simplify our life for the following. And let's say that we are all interested in FIMP dark matter. So the FIMP is always the lightest one. Okay? So in the SUSY example I just made, the gravitation is always the LSP, and then you have a LOSP which is above. But even if this is the case, we have to distinguish between the production mechanisms, because you can have a decay production of B1 decaying to X, as I sketched in the previous slide. But of course, you could always have that B1 freezes out, and then at late time, it decays to the FIMP. Okay, so there are these two main cases. And I want to focus on the first, because this talk is about freezing. So I want to focus on the cases where the production is mostly determined by this process. And as I will show at the end, this is an important point to make here. For the alternative cosmologies I'm going to consider, this will be always the dominant production channel. FIMP from freeze-in, not from loss freeze-out and then decay. Okay? So let me just review what in this first freeze-in paper they predicted as a signal. So in this case, you have that the dominant production is the loss decaying to dx. So you have a prediction for the decay width once you fix the masses of the two guys, the mass of the LOSP and the mass of the FIMP. And the reason why you have a prediction for the gamma is because you want to reproduce the observed abundance. It's like the cross-section in the case of the WIMP. Now you plug the numbers, you put typical weak scale masses. Here I put the numbers I used for the plot of the freezing density before. And you find a huge decay length. So I'm expressing the inverse decay width in centimeters. And you see that it's 10 to the 8 centimeters. So it's, yes? Right. But you don't care about the total width. You just care about the partial width, because this is a very good point, and I should have emphasized that. So this gamma b is not the you care how much times you go to the x, because once you go to the x, you never come back, because these x are very weakly interacting, so there is no inverse reaction. So once they are in equilibrium, if they go even a small fraction of the time to an x, that's good enough to produce
sure,
x.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that if you produce it at collider, then you would expect.
Oh, I see. So good. So for the cosmology, I only care about the partial. In this slide, there is an identification between partial and total. I agree with you. Yes. So I will show one concrete example later. But think about the SUSY case, right? If there is the LOSP and then there is the FIMP, you have our parity, right? So the LOSP can only go to the FIMP. So that's the total width.
But then
right?
Isn't that your scenario too, where you have to freeze out?
Well, that depends on the relative size between this gamma and the cross-section. Because if the cross-section, as I will show in the cases I'm considering, the freeze-out is always depleted. But in general, it depends on the cross-sections, right? But so I'm assuming this case now. So I'm assuming a negligible freeze-out contribution. And this is the prediction I get for the decay length, which is way too big to be measured at colliders. Of course, that now you are starting to become sensitive to the loss property. So if the loss is charged, it could be stopped in the collider. But in general, this is beyond the collider size. OK, so here is the point for the following part of the talk. Very simple point. So these two processes, as I said, they are IR dominated. So they are both active when the temperature is of the order of the weak scale mass, of the order of the masses of the particles we have around. Okay? And of course, all the numbers I quoted were done by using a standard calculation which assumes a radiation dominated era, which is what you expect for temperature of the order of weak scale. But then we have no idea what the thermal history of the universe is above BBN. We just don't know. And so here is an example from previous papers from 15 years ago, where they studied particle production from collisions. So this is the case of annihilations. So it's a case of annihilation. Particle production through annihilations during the inflationary reheating. So while you are dumping entropy to the plasma standard model particles. And what they found is very interesting. So these four plots are, I mean, this plot, each block here is a different plot. So it's probably not the best way to plot that. But on the horizontal axis, you have the mass of the WIMP. And on the vertical axis, you have the cross-section of the WIMP. Kolb, sorry. Yeah, it's Kolb. It's the Kolb, yeah. Typo, sorry. I will correct that. I'm almost to the outline, so that's perfect. Okay, so they studied the Kolb, yes, Kolb. They studied the production of WIMPs through annihilation during inflationary heating. On the horizontal axis, you have mx. On the vertical axis, you have sigma v. And the yellow region are the regions where omega h squared is greater than 1, so badly over closure by an order of magnitude, OK? And the different plots are for different reheating temperature, different reheat temperature. So this is a very high reheat temperature. So this is the radiation-dominated cases, and this is the thermal cross-section you need for the WIMP. Here is the mass over 50, mass over 100, mass over 200. And the general feature of this plot is that as you make the reheat temperature lower, you have access to more space, in particular to smaller cross-section. Why? Well, it's obvious, because once you dump entropy, you dilute any Y you would produce in the absence of this reheating. And we have seen before that the freeze-out commoving density asymptotically goes like the inverse cross-section. So if you dilute, you can make more, which means you are allowed to have a smaller cross-section, which is bad, because if you have smaller cross-section, you also expect smaller signal for a WIMP. So the idea of what I'm going to do in the following is that for the FIMP, the asymptotic commoving density is proportional to the interaction strength. It's not inversely proportional to interaction strength, as for the WIMP. So if we dilute, we are allowing this coupling to be bigger. And so we can expect different signatures from the one from the conventional freeze-in. In particular, there is a hope that this gamma, this decay width or decay length, falls into the displaced vertices region. And to me, this was not obvious, because it's true you can increase this. But we in the absence of dilution for the freeze-in, the decay length is 10 to the 8 centimeters. So it's way beyond the collider size. So given the constraint you have that you cannot reheat below the MEV and all of other constraints I will mention, it was not obvious to me that you can get to the displaced vertex region. But I will show you that this is quite typical in the case of very simple modification of alternative cosmology. OK. So
maybe this was Brian's question a moment ago, but the gamma b, that's the total width. And the total width is assuming that the only decay for the b is in the
right. So when you do the cosmology calculation, this gamma b is the partial width. You don't care about the total, because you care how many times you go to x in cosmology. Of course, there is the assumption that you are going only to that, a collider. Because otherwise, a collider, you go wherever you want to go with more probability, right? So when I try to connect cosmology to collider, I'm assuming that this gamma is the same. So the partial is the total. And as in the case I mentioned, I mean, in SUSY theory, or whenever you have a conserved quantum numbers like R parity, this is quite generic, right? Because the LOSP can only go to the FIMP by conservation of R parity. If you have a neutralino and you have a gravitino, that's the only decay, which is.
But nothing goes wrong on the cosmological side if you assume that that's just the total width, that's the only decay channel, right?
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, if you identify partial to total, then the cosmology doesn't change, right? Because.
So you don't cause any other additional cosmological problems. Nothing about the story relies on.
No. Okay. Okay, so that's the plan for the rest. So I try to motivate, just to summarize what I said. Freeze-in is another nice process to produce dark matter in the early universe. It's in some sense the opposite of freeze-out. Freeze-out, you start from thermal equilibrium and then you depart from thermal equilibrium. Freeze-in, you try to get to thermal equilibrium, you never get there, and then you asymptotically reach final density. And for freeze-in, the general expectation is that you have metastable particle at colliders, but with a decay length well above the size of the detector. So I'm going to consider different cosmology to see if I can ever get into the displaced vertex region. And so that's the plan. I will just sketch how we do the calculation without doing that, just to tell you how we do the calculation for the freeze-in. Because all the calculations I mentioned so far are in a radiation-dominated era, like what is usually believed to be once the temperature is the weak scale. And here I sketch how we do the calculation in the general case. And then I consider two different type of modification. The first one is the most minimal, which I could even call like the standard cosmology. So I'm just assuming that there is inflation, but with theory heat below the weak scale. And then in the other case, I will consider the moduli case, where moduli here is not really the SUSY moduli. It's any metastable particle which dominates the energy density of the universe at some point. And then if there is time, I will discuss one specific model which we are trying to figure out the details of now. So we haven't made much progress, but the model exists. And I will give you a concrete realization of this framework. OK, so just very quickly here. The equation, the Boltzmann equation to solve is the same, of course, for the freezing. The only difference is that the expansion rate now is not the radiation dominated one, because we are in a, considering other cosmological histories. And also, since I'm producing particles from the decay of a bath particle, then the temperature dependence will depend also on the cosmological history. Okay, so I just need to keep track of it. But the equation to solve is the same. And then it's convenient to use the comoving density. I will show plot for this variable here, x, capital X, which is the nx times the scale factor. This will reach an asymptotic value. That's the right variable to use. And I will discuss the evolution in terms of the scale factor, because it's nicer to discuss the scale factor. This is the equation for the asymptotic value. So I said it goes to a constant. So all you need to know is the temperature and the rho as a function of the scale factor. And then you divide by the entropy, and you get the rho today. And let's consider the first modification of cosmological history. So the first modification I want to consider is regular inflation. So this is the inflation we are all familiar with. So just to, here is a sketch of what's going on, just the three main phases. You have the case where the energy density is constant. This is the inflation case. Then you have the phase where the inflaton is oscillating. So the universe is dominated by a fluid which behaves like non-relativistic matter. And the temperature gets very quickly to a maximum value. And then it goes much slower than the usual radiation-dominated case. And then eventually, once the inflaton decays, you enter the radiation-dominated era, which starts at theory heat. And theory heat must be above the MeV. From BBN. So I'm just taking this constraint to be bigger than MEV. And the way, yes?
So about the input oscillations, do you get to a point where you have enough local density to create your model black hole?
So that's density from the plasma, like. Yeah, so the question is how big is Tmax big enough to
no? To create black holes you need large number of
yes.
So this is smooth
yeah.
This is oscillation in time.
Oh yeah, 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 oscillation in time. So by oscillation sorry. By
after you get the computation and the inflation starts behaving like matter.
Right, so all I mean is that there is a phase where whatever dominates the universe behaves like this. OK. So I misunderstood your question. Sorry. OK. OK. So and by the way, the inflaton energy density, the radiation energy density, these are all the bulk of the energy density of the universe. And the energy density of the FIMP is really a small component. So we can do the freezing calculation in a given background, where background, I mean, energy densities which are just fixed, and they are not affected by the presence of the FIMP, because it's really a very small perturbation. So the way you derive this background is to solve these two Boltzmann equations, one for the inflaton.
This is a really bad question. So you're trying to produce the FIMP during the heat.
Precisely. That's my next slide. Yes. So you, so I will get to that. I will get to that. So. Later on, you mean? After that, I assume that everything is radiation dominated and freezing must happen before. If it happens later, there is nothing new to add, right?
So, how is this different from ordinary freezing when you assume that T max, you're right between T max and T max, you have enough models where T max is PV heat essentially, and then you produce it in the normal cosmic evolution.
So the difference is that the decay width I need for the freeze-in will be different. Because so this is the general Boltzmann equation for the freeze-in, right? If you have what you just described, T max equal to T reheat, and then you have production later,
yeah,
then this H is 1 over 2T. It's just a radiation-dominated universe, right?
Yeah.
And this T just goes like A to the minus 1. It's standard. This has been done in the paper, in the original freeze-in paper. And they predicted a decay length which is way too big to be observed at a collider, just by imposing Rayleigh density. So what I want to do was, well, what if we make the freeze-in particles here during this era? Is gamma going to change? The answer is yes. Is gamma going, and this is kind of obvious because you are dumping some entropy. But then the less obvious question is gamma going to fall in the displaced vertices region? And that's the question I want to address. And the answer is yes. And I will explain why. And this was less obvious to me. It has to be large. Right. And the nice feature is that once you have freeze out, usually you expect smaller cross section if you dump entropy because you want to produce more. Smaller cross section means smaller signals. In the case of the freeze-in, you enhance the signal.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt, right? OK. So what my focus will be is to freeze-in production between Tmax and T-reheat. OK. And here I have the same plot I showed before. So x is mb over t, time variable. And y is nx over s, so the comoving number density of the FIMP. And you may remember that for the three different Yukawa couplings of decay width, I was going to get different asymptotic values. Now I'm just tuning the reheat temperature in such a way that they all end up being the same. So what is the message? Is that if you change the reheat temperature, and by the way, the final result only depends on the reheat temperature. It doesn't depend on T max. If you choose T reheat appropriately, then you can reproduce the dark matter abundance for arbitrary decay width. Not quite completely arbitrary. First of all, T reheat cannot be below 1 MeV. So we already have a constraint. But also, T-reheat cannot be too large, it has to be above, actually, this other number. Why? Well, because this is, you see this from this plot. So the comoving number density gets to a peak, and then you start to pay the dilution from the inflaton. And if here you reach the asymptotic, the equilibrium density, then you end up in equilibrium. And the whole FIMP story breaks down. So as I say, this Boltzmann equation was derived under this assumption here. So if at this peak you get that the y of x is as big as the y of equilibrium, then it's another regime, and we're not interested in that. Okay. So here is the final result. And what I plot here is for the same number, so mb 300, mx 100, and gb 2, this is just a number, it's a Weyl fermion. As a function of T reheat, I plot the decay length of B. And there is really a tiny, there are two orders of magnitude over which I can move. Because as I say, T reheat cannot be big, lower than 0.6 GeV. Otherwise, I break down the freeze-in assumption. And also, T reheat cannot be bigger than B. Otherwise, if T reheat is bigger than B, then I produce MB in the standard case.
What is the range?
Oh, the range depends on the energy scale of inflation. So
yeah, it
can be as high as you want. But the
is there a lower bound of half the high T max?
I think so. I mean, it's so there is always a well-defined limit where T max and T reheat are very close to each other. And the theory heat, as long as it's above 1 MeV, I think it's fine. Because all we know about the universe is that up to 1 MeV, it must be radiation dominated. But above, we don't know. So I don't see Any problem? Of course, what we want here is T max to be bigger than the mass of the decaying particle, because otherwise we are not producing. We don't have thermal energy to make that. So it's so there is this extra constraint for us. But in general, it's not constrained. And yeah, so this is the plot I wanted to show, because in this two orders of magnitude of T read, we are allowed to scan. Here you may recognize one T read. Approach MB, you get 10 to the 8 centimeters. So this is a number I quoted before. Here, you enter. Then if you keep plotting this line, it gets flat, right? It doesn't care about your heat anymore, because you are heating so early that freezing happens after heat. And I highlighted in green the displaced vertex region. And I define this arbitrarily. Then we can discuss about that. But this is between 100 micron and 1 meter. So it's 10 to the minus 2 and 10 to the 2 centimeters. And then you see that there is a complete overlap between the displaced vertex region. It all falls within this interval of theory heat I'm allowed to range. And you can make plots for other masses, and it will be similar. It will just shift a bit the location of this line, but it will still be all inside this this region. Now, to go back to Brian's question before, he said, yes, but if you're assuming LOSP and FIMP, then you also have the freeze out, right? So it's true that I always had the freeze out, but the freeze out, I know that if this B is like, no, I have to use sorry. If B is like a weak scale particle and E has a weak scale cross section, I know that more or less I'm in the ballpark of the current. This is the Wien miracle, right? So I know that I'm in the ballpark of the Rayleigh density. Then I have to account for the entropy dumping from inflation. So in this plot, what I'm showing is the same horizontal axis, theory heat. On the vertical axis, I'm showing the depletion of the freeze-out density with respect to the one in the absence of inflation. So of course, the plot starts with one here for high theory heat. Then you see that in the displaced vertices region, the freeze-out production is always suppressed between 1 and 3 orders of magnitude. So it's very safe to ignore freeze-out in this case. OK, so this ends the inflation case. Is there any other question about the inflation? Otherwise, I will complicate the parameter space by adding another parameter. And then I will not show plots, but counterplots. OK, so now I want to consider another different type of background, as I called that before. So energy densities in the universe, background where this freezing production takes place. And I want to discuss the case of moduli. Moduli, so I'm not assuming SUSY, so we are looking for a better name. And if you have a suggestion, I'm happy to take that. So by modulus, I mean any type of metastable particle which is non-relativistic. And at some point, it dominates the energy density of the universe. So here is a similar plot from the one I showed for inflation. But now I have different phases. So let me sketch what these phases are. Of course, going back in time, even if I have some non-relativistic matter, the radiation always wins, right? Because radiation goes like a to the minus 4. Okay, so if I go back in time enough, radiation goes like is the dominant contribution to the energy density. But given the different scale in between radiation and matter, I have that at some point, the modulus, I call modulus any type of non-relativistic matter, will be the dominant contribution to the energy density of the universe. And then I will have a phase which is matter dominated. So MD, this should be MB, but adiabatic. And the reason why I call this adiabatic is because in this phase, the temperature scales like A to the minus 1, where A is the scale factor. So entropy is conserved in this case. But then as the modulus decays, because eventually I want to go back to radiation domination, because I know at MEV I must be radiation dominated. As the modulus decay, then I get to a point where the radiation starts to get dominated by the decay products of the modulus. So this is the non-adiabatic case, which is the same case as inflation, because in inflation, I start with zero radiation. And in this phase, the temperature drops more slowly, just as A to the minus 3 over 8. And then eventually, the modulus decay, and then I have the reheating, and then I have a radiation-dominated phase, so standard cosmology. So these are the four phases. And there are two key variables here. So there is one variable which is always the reheat temperature of the decay. So the temperature of the universe after all of these non-relativistic particles have decayed and after which I can trust entropy conservation again. There is a new variable here, which is D. I call this D roughly as the ratio of entropies before and after the decays. This is the amount of entropy I dump into the plasma. And you can check numerically that this D is basically the amount you dilute the freezing density. So I call this D because this is the amount of dilution you induce on any density you generate from freeze out or freeze in. This is very general. So unlike the inflation case, I have one extra variable here. I have also D. So the parameter space is two-dimensional. I have to specify theory heat and D. And of course, now we have a richer set of options because the production can take place here, which is the same case as the inflation case. But it can also take place during a matter-dominated era or even in a very early radiation-dominated era. And then we pay the dumping. So we have three different regions where the freezing can happen. So here again, I have the same plot as showed before, same masses, same values of the decay width. And then I tune theory heat and D in such a way that all give me the energy density I observe. Okay, so the message is again that, of course, the final density depends on D and theory heat. And I am allowed to have larger couplings if I dilute more. So diluting more means lower theory heat and large D, of course. So if I go along the large D direction and low theory heat, I'm allowed to have bigger decay width. With always the same caveat that once I get to the peak, I never want to reach the equilibrium number density because otherwise my framework breaks down. Okay? So we have to identify in the two-dimensional plane, theory heat and D, where are these regions where I achieve where I break down my approximation. And this is the region. So in this upper region of the log D, log theory heat, you get a Y at the peak of the distribution, which is bigger than the one of equilibrium. And so we are not interested in this region. So I put a gray band. And as usual, we are not interested in theory heat bigger than MB. Because if theory heat is bigger than MB, then I'm not doing anything unconventional. Like this is the standard freeze-in. And I put red lines on these plots to highlight the three different era. So in this region, freeze-in happens in the the early radiation-dominated era. In this region, happens in the intermediate matter-dominated era. And in this region, the freezing happens in the non-adiabatic matter-dominated era, where non-adiabatic is the case where you are still matter-dominated, but the radiation is dominated by the decay products of this metastable particle. OK. So what I want to do now is this is a two-dimensional space. So I want to plot isocontours of the decay length as a function of these two variables. And this is the result. And as you may see again, the green region, it is displaced vertex. And it is still all inside the accessible space where my approximation is valid. And by the way, I'm stopping here at 1 MeV because of BBN. And you may recognize the 10 to the 8 centimeters once I approach MB, which is the huge decay length I don't want to have because it's too big. But like I would say, a third or even a half of the parameter space always leads to displaced vertices. You predict every next line. So this is this slide is to answer your question and to see that this message is quite general because here I have 300 GV and 100 GV. Here I have 3 TV and 1 TV, so I rescale both by a factor of 10. And here I have the case where X is much lighter than B. So this is 300 GeV and 1 GeV. This is 3 TV and 10 GV. So you see that in all the cases, the displaced vertices region is all inside the plane. And so in this. GB, I should. GB is the number of degrees of freedom. B is a Weyl fermion.
Ah, okay.
So it's not the coupling. So in this plane, once I tell you theory heat and D, the coupling is fixed because I'm imposing Rayleigh density. So these are isocontours of Rayleigh density. So the strength of the coupling set the decay length. And the green region is where the decay length is in the displaced vertices.
So it's very sensitive to the ratio of the mass. So for example, if I make a chi very light, what will happen if you drop, right?
So yeah, you need less dilution because morally making x small is some form of dilution because you pay the ratio, right? You pay the ratio. So if you but even if the ratio between the masses is a factor of 100, like here, actually this is 300, so the ratio between the masses is 300, you still are in this plane and you need a dilution as big as 10,000. So even if you, I will show you one example where this, one model where this ratio is set by a loop, and that's the typical. Even if it's a loop separation between the two masses, you're still in the interesting region. And then again, I can do the same exercise I did for the freeze out before. And I say, well, can I worry about the freeze out of B? And here again, I have green region, displaced vertices, and I have isocontours of the suppression in the freeze out density. So in the displaced vertices region, the freeze out density is always suppressed by at least an order of magnitude, but more likely by 4 or 5 orders of magnitude. So this dilution totally kills the freeze out contribution for typical weak scale cross sections. OK, so in the last 5 minutes, I want to discuss one specific model. Because so far I have been very model independent. So x, b, these were particles. Gamma b was just a rate for the decay. And then all the plots I show were just completely generic. Now, I want to focus on one specific model. So this is a simple model for the supersymmetric QCD axion. This is the superpotential. And of course, I need to add something to break the Peutz-Jeghwin symmetry, because at 3 level, this is unbroken. And I need to add, and we can discuss about the way you may have to break the Peutz-Jeghwin symmetry in this case. But for now, let's assume that the Peutz-Jeghwin is broken. And there are more options. There is more than one option. So what happens? It happens that PQ breaking gives a mu term for this superpotential.
Why do we need S squared?
So the problem with S is that then once S gets above, you get the mu. Actually, we just wrote a paper with S H up, H down. We just wrote a paper, but S is 10 to the 10, 10 to the 11 GV. So the mu term for the Higgs will be really huge. So you will have supersymmetry at 10 to the 10, 10 to the 11 GV, which, I mean, that didn't stop us, but you may not like because it's not very natural.
Not so
split. It's max is split. It's very split. It's very split. It's very split. It's max is split. Super split. Not super split.
Meso split.
But actually, the interesting thing I want just to advertise this model. So SH up, H down is the most minimal, also because you don't need to add anything else to break the Peutz-Jeghwin symmetry.
And so it's UV complete,
and you break through one loop effective potential. So it's a very nice model. It's not natural for the weak scale, but it's the simplest model for the axion, because you only add, for the supersymmetric axion, you only add one chiral superfield, and you get the breaking from one loop effective potential. But OK, coming back to this case, now I have F squared over M star, where M star is some cutoff of the theory. It can be M gut, M string, M Planck. It's some large scale, OK? And I want the natural weak scale. So I set mu to be F squared over M star. Of course, I set this to be the weak scale. So like 1 TV, more or less. And as a prediction, I also get a coupling between the axino and the Higgsino and the Higgs boson from this superpotential. I just give one VEF to the S. The other S, I give an axino. And then I get this Yukawa. And it's very simple to show that this Yukawa goes like mu over F. Okay, so let's make an estimate of mu over F. I put mu of 1 TV, F 10 to the 11. These are mu of 1 TV comes from like the weak scale. F 10 to the 11 comes from cosmology. Of course, it doesn't have to be the case, but let's just set this as a reference value. And for a Yukawa of 10 to the minus 8, this was the upper curve of my three freeze-in curves. You overclose by 8 orders of magnitude if this is the Yukawa. So you have a huge cosmological axino problem. Of course, if the axino is the LSP.
Is this independent of the
So the statement, okay, the statement I just made is assuming T reads above the weak scale. Now I'm going to change that. So that's a very good question. So the mass of the axino in this model is model dependent, but in a broad class of models, it will be typically one. So you have a three-level mass here, which is v square over m star, just by giving the x of f. This is a weak scale. This is really small. This will never be the dominant contribution. In the class of model we are working on, you have, I don't know, you can add the coupling S, N, N, where N are the right-handed neutrinos. And this will induce a one loop breaking through the potential of PQ. In that case, the typical mass will be one loop below the superpartner mass. So it will be m tilde over 16 pi square. So in this class of model, the axino, first of all, is very likely to be the LSP, is a FIMP because it has a very small interaction, and the mass is one loop down. So it fits the previous classes of models I discussed. S doesn't break SUSY, no.
So there is an entropy
gap,
not
little
f.
Or the SUSY X.
SUSY
like.
Breaking scale. So can't you write that?
So
there is an operator that you can
absolutely.
So how does that compare?
So that depends on the scale of big F. Of
big F.
Depends on, if you want, on the gravitino mass. So,
so this is comparable to the gravitino mass. So you can't forbid it, I can imagine. But there is.
What happened? So in the absolutely right. In this class of models, there is always a gravitino contribution. So you have to assume that the gravitino mass is below the superpartner mass. So you need low scale breaking. So you cannot have conventional gravity, but gauge mediation works, for example. And at that point, this contribution of the gravitino is subdominant with respect to the one coming from the one loop I just discussed. It doesn't break supersymmetry.
It doesn't break supersymmetry.
It just generates a U-turn, and then you go down, and then at
and
the weak scale, you
break. Whatever scale you want.
Precisely, yes, yes. So now this is an important, so as I show in my next slide, this is very work in progress. So we are aware of all of these issues, and we want to clarify under what condition for these models we achieve the FIMP and all the stories. But the interesting point here is that if we now consider an alternative cosmologies, and I mean, in SUSY, we don't even need to add anything because you can just say that it's a modulus going doing the job we want. Then we can get enough dilution in such a way that we solve this cosmological axino problem. And then we can compute the decay length we expect. And of course, here, what you measure at LAC is the decay of the LSP to axino. And the LSP doesn't have to be the axino. Remember that the axino talks to the axino. And then the LSP will have some axino component. So in this equation here, I put a mixing angle that I set to 1, just assuming that the axino is the full LSP. But in case it's not the axino, you just have to rotate, and there will be a prefactor here. But the amazing coincidence is that for these numbers, the decay width is 5 centimeters. So it's precisely in the displaced vertex region. And all you need to do is to consider alternative cosmologies in such a way that you don't overclose the universe. But this is a clean prediction for collider. OK, so let me just summarize, and then I can take more questions if you have any. So all we are doing is to just say that we don't know what happened before BBN. And so instead of assuming that there was radiation domination up to infinity, we just consider other options. And these, of course, are not very difficult to come out with. First of all is the inflation, which I'm sure nobody doubts that. But even in supersymmetric theories, there are these moduli which do the job we are interested in. And two general lessons we have been learning so far is that the loss freeze out is always suppressed by one, at least one or two orders of magnitude, but even more for the typical region of parameter space. And then the region where you have displaced vertices as collider always seems to fall under the region we are interested in. And so we plan to, okay, now the general framework is set up. So we are just working out the details of the Axino case, all of these masses coupling, and do more serious prediction for the Axino case. Thank you.